Welcome to Hophead Said's Pints and Pairings. I am here with Jason Hendrick, the Hungry Man, and I am Curtis Taylor, Hophead Said. We are getting kicked off with BJCP style category number one, which happens to be light lagers, quite possibly my least favorite of the BJCP categories. However, there are a couple notable exceptions.
And I would concur, but they can be refreshing in the right circumstances.
Yeah, I generally, I haven't found the right circumstance yet, I don't think. But as I'm scrolling through the BJCP, if you go to bjcp.org, over on the right-hand side, you'll see a little link that goes to style guidelines, and you can kind of take a look through it. And there are 23 recognized beer guidelines. And so we'll be going through all those, except for I am splitting up Scottish ales and Irish ales. So we've got in store for you about 24 episodes.
There are some subcategories to those styles, though, too, right?
So oh, yeah. So each one of these categories, you know, these are the major ones. And so any of them can have from 2 to 5, and some of them might even have 6 different subcategories. And so when we go through these categories, what we'll do is we'll end up picking one beer out of all of those to talk about, one that's kind of middle of the road, and so that you can go either way on any kind of beer pairings,
sure,
food pairings.
You want something that really highlights the style, but like you said, allows for flexibility.
Right. And so, and it, just thinking off the top of my head, you know, an IPA, the category IPA, there's just too many, the span is too great, yeah, in there. And so that one will be a tough one. And there may be a couple bonus episodes as we go through some of these that, even though it's still in the same category, it needs its own,
podcast.
Right.
And the challenge today is that there's so much competitive edge that people are trying to achieve. So there's unique styles coming up all the time, and creativity and experimenting with different grain beds and yeasts and crossing those recognized styles in order to get something unique that people are going to respond to. But really, when you get down to it, as we mentioned in the intro, you got to have a basis to work from. You've got to know what your general style is and what you can relate to before you can move into something experimental. So these 23 are really going to hone us in, give us a nice base knowledge, give us some excitement when we talk about food. And then if you guys want to go home and get creative on your own, so be it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the very first category is called light lager, and it's about what you would imagine. So it starts off with a subcategory of light American lagers, which is, you know, your Bud Lights, your Miller Lights, your Coors Lights. I won't get too in depth.
You don't want to get too beer.
My contempt with the category, but I would prefer a carbonated water as opposed to one of these beers.
Maybe a nice segue to another podcast down the road.
Right, carbonated light beer alternatives. You know, and in the light lager category, the alcohols range anywhere from like 2.5% up to about 6%. And so with the average being like 4.8 to 5.2. So nothing that is going to be overly alcoholic, although there are some versions of like a standard American Pilsner, which can come in at 6%, which is plenty.
Yeah, for a single seating, 6% is a nice kind of range, mm-hmm, to be in. Now, when we're talking about, not to get too beer geeky too early, but when you're talking about the lights and the low percentage, are we achieving that just through the grain bill, or are we really able to bring in like a session where it's actually a second runnings from a previous brew in order to bring that alcohol percentage down?
Well, you could do, you could get a light Pilsner, or a light lager from the second runnings if it was a big enough beer to start off with the second one. Generally, these are just because they're so light in color, because one, they use very little grain, so that keeps the alcohol down.
Okay.
Keeps the alcohol low because there isn't a lot of sugar for them. Then you have then there's adjuncts that are added into there too as well. So corn, some rice sometimes every once in a while, and those things aren't adding any color to it. And so these beers are pouring a very, very pale straw color and very light. And what ends up happening too is they ferment really, really well. So there's very light body, they're crisp, they're clean. Some would call them refreshing, and especially as you get to some that have a little more flavor in them, even going, even just one step up from light American lager, you go to the standard lager, there's a lot of flavor difference between those two. And today we've got Stella Artois, which is actually considered a premium American lager. That's what the style is. Do you have, here we go. Jason, can you open that? And then I'll grab the glasses. So,
and with any of our shows, we like to get a little bit of the extra senses added in.
There you go. And we've got little tiny tasters. I ended up getting the big bottle of Stella because I didn't want to necessarily buy a six pack. I've had this several times. You know, there's
fizzle on that one.
Yeah, there's a low. These beers are characterized by crystal clear. These are crystal clear beers. Very little head retention at all on it, and most
it dissipated almost immediately.
The head retention, you know, that comes from the proteins that are left over in the beer, and this is a testament to the fact that there's very little grain used in or proteins left in there from whether they're filtered out, whatever it is, and just the small amount of malt that's actually used in them. So you can see that it dissipates really quickly. Low malt flavors,
definitely low malt,
low malt and hop.
But
aromas.
Surprisingly, you know, I drink Stella as kind of a fallback when I'm at a bar or a place where they don't have a more creative selection that I've become accustomed to. But there's actually a nice aroma to the Stella.
I get some corn. There's a sweetness, and then also the noble hops, which kind of give you this herbal, spicy aroma. That's kind of a common attribute to noble hops.
Sure, I agree. I actually get a little bit. It takes a little bit of closed eye, mm-hmm. you know, intake. But
some of the things I've
there's almost like a little bit of a ginger, or you know, the center of a pineapple. When you get a little bit of that kind of tough pulp, where it's not mm-hmm. really sweet, but you still get the essence of the mm-hmm. pineapple a little bit. I get a little of that on the nose.
Yeah, there's a possibility in, with some of these, and not necessarily in this one, although the suggestion made me think of it right away, was a little green apple that can be appropriate in these beers. And this is called the premium American lager. I can't remember if I said standard. I mean, this is considered a premium American lager right here.
The one thing I really like about this style, again, I don't drink it frequently, and typically it's going to be on a very hot day after being out, you know, with some manual labor mowing the lawn or something, or with a really spicy taco just to cut through mm-hmm. some of that heat. But what is nice about this is it does give a kind of an insight to the brewing process. When you smell it, when you taste it, you get some yeastiness, you get some of those grains that let you know where this beverage came from originally. And there are a lot of beers that have really kind of intense flavor profiles for me. With the lagers, I think at the very minimum, it does give me kind of that true to the process feel.
Well, and this one is the Stella in particular that we're drinking is, it's a well-balanced beer. And so there isn't a lot of hop, but you know, it's not a real pronounced hop. There's the sweet malt, the bitterness comes through to balance it out. And then it finishes dry, kind of just almost begging you to have another drink, you yeah. know? So they did their job well. One of the things, I mean, I would prefer a Pilsner more. I prefer a little more hop, a little more assertive hops in it. But, you know, when you were just talking about maybe spicy Mexican, you know, just Mexican foods, you know, when you drink a beer like this and you know that there's a certain amount of adjuncts, meaning there's something that's not malt in there, like a malted barley, where they've used corn in the brewing process, think about those corn flavors and what they would go well with. And this has a really nice malt flavor, which would help to kind of bring back some of the spicy heat that you might find from jalapenos. But then also just think about a corn tortilla. I mean, the you're laying a base layer there of a sweet corn like flavor in this beer, sure. and then a corn tortilla.
And we talked about that in the intro. This is what we consider one of those complementary styles, you know, where you're laying a couple of flavors together that are very similar and mm-hmm. you know, enhance each other. The other thing that's great about lagers when we're talking about food is that they're good for marinades. You mm-hmm. know, when you're dealing with chicken and kind of summery time foods, because it adds a little bit of flavor that liquid helps break down, depending on what other spices you put in the marinade, liquid helps break down the connective tissue a little bit, and it doesn't overpower what you're marinating in. We used to do, when I was working in private clubs, we would go out to the Caddy Shack during the middle of the day in summertime, and we'd marinate a good, nice skirt steak with some lager and a little lime juice, salt, and pepper, and that's all you need. And it offers just enough of that little sweet bitterness to highlight the food without overpowering the flavors of the steak by itself.
I never thought of using something this light as a marinade. You know, I generally think of using an ale and especially assertive, like a porter or stout, or maybe even some winter ales too that have some spice components to them as well.
Yeah, again, beers are going to give us all kinds of flexibility, and not everyone's going to follow the same route. But you know, it's about playing and experimenting and seeing what works for you. And again, I wouldn't sit around and drink this regularly. If I'm going to sit at home and watch a good movie with my wife, I'm probably going to break out something different. But on the right hot day, you know, you could eat. Another good thing when we're talking about using it in food, not just drinking it with food, when we go down to get oysters at the beach, put this down in a pot of clams. That way you're not using up or diminishing your good beer supply as a flavor component, but you're still getting some of those grainy, bittery hop notes and beer notes imparted into your clams and your seafood. You know, it really highlights and brings in some interesting flavors.
And I like the grainy description as well too, because this is the malt that's in here is very light. You might think of white bread, maybe some crackers, but there is a kind of a huskiness kind of present in there. Yeah. And this is when, you know, talking about serving on these too, you know, you can use this would be, if you really want to enhance the presentation of this in a Pilsner glass, for sure. Certainly a stained, which is a really tall, a very thin conical shape.
Not too tall, though. We're not talking about those yard things like in Vegas.
No, we're talking, you know, probably 12 inches right. tall, whatever. But even if you had that, you know, that's built for mass consumption. We're talking about enjoying this here. But what's nice about the geometry of those is that it allows the bubbles to float up to the top, kind of lazy, float up to the top. A lot of times there's an etching at the bottom, which is a nucleide site where all of the carbonation kind of starts to come out of the solution. And it gives you a chance to just admire the clarity and the color, because it really is. It's a beautiful straw.
And that's one color thing that's really fantastic about this style too, is the crisp clarity. You know, we're going to get into some styles down the road that are, you can't see through them.
Right.
And which is great too for its own reasons. But this, it just feels, when I look at it, it makes me feel crisp and cool and refreshed just without even taking a drink. And when we talk about tasting, I think one thing I want to make sure everyone thinks about is how you're tasting. As we mentioned previously, there's a lot of zones in the palate, and we want to get each one of those zones involved with the experience. You know, there's salty, there's sweet, there's bitter. And so when you take a drink, especially if it's the first time you've ever had that beer style, swish it around your mouth a little bit, and then after you swallowed, take a little intake of air. Any kind of oxygen that's coming across your palate is going to open up some other flavor components that you may not have experienced previously. Mm-hmm. And with this one, when you're talking about bread and grain, it offers some interesting notes when it finishes.
Well, and these beers too, typically served around 35 to 40 degrees, so fairly cold. The colder the liquid, the more carbonation it holds. And so as soon as you put it in your mouth, it's getting super warm. You know, I mean, it's getting this
98.6.
Right, you know, so all of a sudden everything is starting to warm up. So then what happens is all the carbonation starts to escape the liquid. And the carbonation is bringing out with it all of these aroma components. And so once you put it in and you breathe over the top of it, that's hitting the roof of your mouth, and it's coming back out through your nose, and it's just adding to the pleasure of whatever it is that you're
drinking. Right now, while we're talking, I'm actually getting a little bit of citrus pith, but in a pleasing way. A lot of times people view the white pithy component of an orange or a grapefruit as bitter and unattractive, but in this context, it kind of works nicely. You know, it gives you that little bit of vibrant reminder of what citrus is without being tart or overpowering.
Mm-hmm. So just in general, as a pairing for this one with something that is this light flavor too, you want to make sure that the food you're pairing it with isn't overly flavorful. So if you're looking at, you may think that this is going to be refreshing with a giant piece of ribs, you know, baby back ribs, whatever it is. Well, it might be, but all it's acting as is just a palate cleanser. Yeah, you're not getting any taste of this.
Yeah, you're almost washing away and refreshing for the next bite.
Right.
The one thing I would say in well, I guess it's more in compliment, but slightly contrast to that is with those spicy foods. Mm-hmm. You know, those are going to be very heavy in the flavor component. They're going to be heat. They're going to mm-hmm. be probably earthy, depending on what spices you're using. And this does cut through nicely, but again, that breath and that follow-up will offer some notes from the beer that are pleasing and play well with the spicy foods.
Yeah, if we're looking at different kinds of cuisines, talking about cheeses, some lighter cheeses.
Because I was just thinking cheeses.
Some lighter flavored cheeses, you know, something like a mozzarella, something that isn't too, I don't know, pungent or sharp. The beer can complement that. And then also on when you go to food, you know, pork or poultry, something that's got even fish.
And that's the white meat, I think, is going to be your key. When you start getting into the irony and minerally rich redder meats, this beer would never stand up.
Right.
But, you know, we've marinated chicken, we've done fish before. You can even poach a little bit in fish, which would be an interesting take. But I think the white direction is where you're going to go because it's more mild. It's going to play well. They're going to balance each other. Mm-hmm. And the other thing when we're talking about, like, the cheeses and whatnot, I think the light lagers offer a crispness. And one of the ideas I would just pondering is, what if we did it with salads? You know, we're getting into the summertime mm-hmm. with fresh produce, crisp greens, juicy, rich tomatoes, where they're not a coating or a rich flavor that's going to overpower your palate. And I think I'm going to go home and try a crisp lager with some fresh greens and maybe a little light vinaigrette.
And I think, and you hit a really good point too, where I think people generally overlook any kind of vegetables unless it's a grilled vegetable. And in which case you've got all these smoke flavors, which end up covering up, you know, the vegetable flavors. But being married to a vegetarian, I've learned how to prepare, you know, raw to steamed to grilled vegetables fairly well.
This could
well.
Go actually really nice with a sauteed cauliflower, almost like an Indian style mm-hmm. where you get a little bit of maybe chickpea and cauliflower mm-hmm. and, you know, brown that up in a pan.
Right. Yeah, that's it, you know, and as soon as you start saying chickpeas, yeah, there you go. That's, you know, there's a sweetness in that.
If you notice, a lot of those restaurants, Indian, Mediterranean cuisine, and spicy Mexican, lager is almost exclusive on the menu. Mm-hmm. You don't get a lot of deviations in the beer options right. because this is what works well with those styles.
Right, right. Yeah, so one of the key suggestions for any beer pairing is just matching strength. And so, you know, if it's a high flavorful, or if it's a really flavorful piece of entree, whatever it is that you're eating, then you want to up the flavor of the beer just so that they match. Otherwise, one of them is going to cover up the other one. And say, if you were to go to, you know, when you're talking about salads, I've got some really great suggestions, but using like IPAs, which are, you know, that's kind of crazy talk, yeah. But these salads are high flavor salads too, and so they play together really well. And so that's one of the things you want to make sure that when you're tasting these things, that the food doesn't cover up the beer, or the beer isn't covering up
right
the food.
And when we talk about pairings, again, creativity, try it. You know, we're going to give you suggestions. Try something different or try the same. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't work out for you, don't do it again or order pizza. Who cares?
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah. Again, because all you're doing is eating and drinking beer. So it's all good from there. Well, I think this is a good wrap up right there. So this is,
you notice I'm chewing on a little bread, getting ready for the next segment. Getting
cleansing the palate here. So, light lagers, was the style BJCP style number one. And light lagers are in there, the Bud Lights, the standard American lagers, which would be like a Miller High Life, the premium American
lager, which is an iconic brand too. We don't,
right.
One thing I want to make sure we impart is, although it's kind of beer geeks and connoisseurs, we don't always gravitate that way, but some of these are very iconic brands. They started out somewhere where population enjoyed their beer enough to build up the brand and to move forward. So there's a lot of options out there. Drink what you like, pair it how you like, and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. So then we just had the premium American Lager Stella Artois. Then there's the Munich Helles, which is really hard to find around in the United States. There are some places, brew pubs and smaller breweries, that you'll be able to find it, but nothing really mass market unless you can get to Germany. And then Dortmunder exports.
I may have to take a trip then, because I actually have never had a Munich Helles, and that, before last week, it was the first time I'd ever heard it.
Well, there's the Planner Premium Lager, Spaten Premium Lager. So sometimes you can find those around. But the unfortunate part is that it's been on a boat and it's come from Germany. And so it's been beat up a lot, sure, by the time it gets here. And these beers also, we should point out too, are best fresh. And so if they're coming,
aging beer.
Yeah. And if you've come, and if they've come from a long ways away, say Germany, then you know that they've spent a good, you know, most of their life on a boat and in customs. And so it takes a while to get that beer to them.
Distributed in either clear or green bottles.
Well, and that's another thing too, because we're drinking Stella out of a green bottle. You can also get Stella in cans, and I would suggest that. But I reached clear back to the backside of the beer cabinet, the cooler, when I picked out this beer, because I wanted the one that was furthest in the back. And you want to make sure that when you're looking at green bottle beer, Stella, Pilsner, Raquel, or even clear bottles like Corona or anything else, that if it's sitting out underneath the lights, even the fluorescent lights in the building, it only takes 2 or 3 minutes for those beers to turn skunky. And so you don't want that. You don't want any skunked flavors in your beers.
No, sir.
And then the last one in the subcategories is the Dortmunder Export. And you can find that if you've got a Gordon Biersch around you, the Golden Export.
Oh, interesting.
So you'll be able to find, you'll be able to taste that. And then the Einar Jahrhundert is one that I've seen around. And, you know, it's all right. It's a good beer. So, but again, it comes from Germany, so it was beat up pretty bad. All right, so this has been Pints and Pairings, BJCP category number one.
Number uno.
And we've just finished it up. We're getting ready for the next one. And so I would like to remind you to eat, drink, and be hoppy. We'll catch you in the next episode. Cheers.
Cheers.